The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Just got done listening to another award-winning Need to Know. He is Kip Kiefer. I am Tony Curry. We do this other show called Kiefer and Curry. By the way, and I don't even think about this sometimes, Kip, because you know you pour your heart and soul and guts into being patriotic and being one of the most patriotic United States of America citizens I know, and then all of a sudden I come in here and just pretend that I'm supposed to have you turn that off and just kind of flip it around and go in a totally different direction. Sometimes I think you probably welcome that.
Let me flip the breaker here. Okay, that's it. I got it.
Is that what that is back there?
Yeah, so I got a breaker here. It goes from all-time American to regular guy.
There you go. So the last couple of weeks, we've been talking some college football, and I'm going to do that again. Not because I don't have anything else I want to talk about. I just really enjoy talking because we do a show called K4 Wins, which is a handicapping show, which we'll do on Tuesdays and Fridays at 10 o'clock Central Time. That's what we do. Handicapping stuff. And your son is just huge. Another fantastic weekend for him. The rest of us kind of stunk it up. Kai Gregory also joins us on the show. But there were some things that happened this past weekend in college football. By the way, was that not just an incredible weekend of college football? I mean, just talk about that a little bit. What an incredible weekend.
Yeah, I mean a lot of real titanic matchups and a lot of dramatic games and that's what it's supposed to be. I mean, I know you guys get sick and tired of me talking about cupcake games and games that don't mean anything. But the bottom line is those games are not even an appetizer for me. They're just a waste of time. I want to see the best play the best. That's what I want to see in college football, and that's what we got to see to some extent this past weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to match, and we're going to go through some of the lines. Have you seen any of the early lines, by the way, for this weekend?
I glanced at them this morning only because our partner, I feel like a mule in the field, you know. I'm not even recovered from – you know, 24 hours, 15 hours on Saturday, and like right? 9 hours. And the slave driver, Kai Gregory. Jeez. Okay, I need you guys. I got to have two absolute locks today. We got to have it now. You get busy. I had 9,000 things going on this morning.
I hear you.
My phone was ringing. I had all kinds of emails. I got all kinds of planning. I got a big trip next week, a double trip. I'm going out to Las Vegas for a convention the first part of the week, flying all the way back and packing up and heading down to Auburn for the football weekend next weekend, not this coming weekend, but next weekend with the film crew and my partner, Terry Quillian, we are going to the festivities before the game at Auburn. And then we'll be at the Georgia Auburn game next weekend. Nice. So what a week next week. You might have to have me do the show 2 weeks from today on a stretcher. Brother, I don't know what's going to be left of me.
I got you covered. We'll see if Auburn can have the same type of success as Alabama had this past weekend. Of course, a lot of people saying that Alabama's got right again. All of a sudden, it's amazing, man. After that FSU loss, people calling for Kalen DeBoer's head. You know, the legend was going, losing his mind. All of a sudden, you're beating a team that had won 33 straight at home, the Georgia Bulldogs. And I believe, was it 1-10 now that Kirby Smart is Georgia's 1-10.
He's 1-8. Georgia's 1-10 in their last 11 games against Alabama. Crazy. Kirby personally 1-8.
Yeah, 1-8, which is amazing. The number's now 4-21 for Coach Franklin at Penn State, which I almost felt for it was such a great game to see them come back what they did in the fourth quarter and to lose that game the way they did. And I know that Kai's also all over Franklin. I know your son is just the opposite, thinks he's a great coach. He is, but I mean, there's no disputing the fact that you're 4-21 is not a good mark against top 10 competitors in his sport. That's just amazing because I think anyone would take Coach Franklin anywhere just because I think he is a fantastic coach, but for some reason
he won at Vanderbilt and now Vanderbilt's winning again, but it was I said it, I think a couple weeks ago on this show, and I've said it on other shows. To me, Tony, if you look at schools where guys leave a lesser program, we talked about Jeff Brohm earlier this year, who left Purdue and went back to his alma mater of Louisville. But Brohm had actually had Purdue halfway competitive in his 3 or 4 years in Lafayette, Indiana. And when he left, Purdue has pummeled back into the tank.
I know it.
And you're seeing Arizona doing the same thing. Jed Fish, who's now the coach of the Washington Cougars, had Arizona going in the right direction a couple years ago. They almost won the Big 12. And instead now he's left, and I'm not even sure who the Arizona coach is at the moment, but Arizona's lousy again. So as much as they succeed at the next place they go, if you look at what they leave behind, and if those schools don't continue, I think that's a really indicator of who might really know what they're doing and who doesn't.
There's no doubt. That's a great point. Of course, some other great games. It was funny because my son came in town, and I should have posted a picture. I've been off social media for a little while, but I've got 3 65-inch televisions. I got 2 older televisions. One's got a black line at the other one's the side of it's busted out. And then I've got the new one. And so I had 3 65-inch televisions. I'm watching Alabama on one TV. There was another game going on that evening. It was the end of the Auburn game. And then of course my Cincinnati Reds, they needed to win the last 2 games of the year. Thank goodness the Mets just blew it again yesterday. So the Cincinnati Reds in the playoffs, it's just a great time for the Curry household because obviously yeah. I did not plan on. And listen, you can say whatever you want about Terry Francona. What an amazing coach. His first year at Cincinnati, had the over 79.5 wins, by the way, and they blew past that with a couple of games left. But yeah, with that pitching lineup and now on a short series with the LA Dodgers, who knows what's going to happen. I did want to mention a couple of things. It was another great game between the Fighting Illini of Illinois and the USC Marching Trojans. You know, it was interesting because the Fighting Illini, they lose by 53 to Indiana, so you didn't know what was going to happen. It was homecoming this past week. Against USC, but what people aren't talking about in that game, a game won by Illinois 34-32. Did you by chance see the halftime show?
No.
All right. Well, maybe you should have, because you know they had the big parade before the game. I guess on that Friday night, on the 26th, and they invited some special people to come in to be grand marshals for the big band from Champaign, Illinois. Do you know what famous band is from Champaign, Illinois?
I should, but please enlighten
me. Well, they invited the 4 members of this band as grand marshals, and then the 4 of them were together and said, maybe we should do something during the halftime show with the Fighting Illini band. There's 400 band members, and they said, you know, we can do that. It was the first time that Alan Grassner, Neil Doughty, Bruce Hall, and Kevin Cronin of REO Speedwagon. It was the first time that all 4 members had played together since December 31st, 1988.
That's unbelievable.
They were all together.
I've not seen that anywhere, even in the media.
So Kevin Cronin just recently played the Coca-Cola Amphitheater, and it was called Kevin Cronin and Friends. And I'm like, why are they calling it REO Speedwagon? It's because Kevin Cronin doesn't own the rights to the name REO Speedwagon, but Bruce Hall does.
Okay.
Bruce and Kevin hate each other. They don't like each other. That's why they broke up. They no longer play together. And so he doesn't know. So everyone knows it's Kevin Cronin because no one can sing Kevin Cronin like Kevin Cronin can. And so if you go see Bruce Hall, you're getting REO Speedwagon without the lead singer. And if you see Kevin Cronin, he can sing whatever he wants, but it's Kevin Cronin and Friends. So it's one of those mixed things. So they played together for the first time in 37 years. They played Riding the Storm Out, Rolling with the Changes, and 157 the Riverside Avenue, which is fantastic side.
That was phenomenal. I'm going to have to get on YouTube and find
it. If you get a chance to check it out, it is fantastic. Unbeknownst to fans, they're like, why are they playing Riding the Storm Out? And there's Kevin Cronin playing, you know, Riding the Storm. It was fantastic. It gives me goosebumps.
That's unbelievable.
Really good.
When Fleetwood Mac was a big thing, the weird album that Lindsey Buckingham insisted they make, Tusk, after Rumors was like the best selling album of all time. He wanted to go a different direction.
Yep.
You know, which
it was Mr. Roboto, man. It was like, what in the hell are you guys doing? It was weird. Yeah.
But remember, for a couple of songs, they enlisted the USC marching band in the actual song Tusk, too.
They sure did.
And it's just such a different collaboration.
And you heard that on Saturday night, too. You also heard that the USC marching band was there, and they played Tusk. They played almost every single show.
USC was the opponent. Yeah,
So it was a great night.
That is really a cool angle that I had no idea. I'm so consumed on Saturday because, as most people know, I do a Saturday morning show called Game Time with Terry Quillian and the Legend. And we actually had the Lieutenant Governor of Georgia on Saturday, who's running for governor of Georgia and is probably going to win, Burt Jones, a former UGA, a former Bulldog walk-on who was a special teams player mainly, but he was so accomplished as a walk-on. He was a captain of the team his senior year and just a great guy and gave us a great preview of the game and his perspectives and whatnot. So that's how my day starts on Saturday. But then I do another show on Sunday morning called The Morning After, mm-hmm. where, you know, I get calls from all over the place. Terry and I mean, we've got to be riveted to the TV all day and watch as many games and as many plays and absorb as much information, because I don't want to do that show on Sunday if somebody goes, did you see the so-and-so game?
Absolutely.
No, I didn't get to see it. That's not a good
excuse. By the way, if you do radio, if anyone ever says, did you see, you always say yes.
Oh, yeah.
You always say yes because, yeah, you lie. You lie out your ass, because if someone says, did you see that? And you say no, then it looks like you don't watch football. It doesn't.
Exactly. So
you have to say, I don't care if it's 3 o'clock in the morning and it's the BYU Colorado game, which, by the way, was on till 2:45 a.m. I was watching it Sunday morning. If they say, did you see that play? Always say yes, because they're going to explain the play. Then you go, I know, right? And by that time you're on the computer, you're finding exactly what the hell they're talking about, because you want to make sure that you think, or they think, that you watch college football every second, every day, because, well, you should.
Well, you know, if you're going to be on and be an authority, you really need to
That's
know
right.
what you're talking about.
That's
so,
right.
You know, I try to get up an hour early, even for that show on Sunday morning, and read as many accounts as games I can get my hands on. And I'll tell you what helps, which is amazing. Cause at first, you know, I'm not a child of this age, but Tony, I've actually gotten to the point where now I've got ChatGPT on my iPad. And I'm telling you, what a great resource. I can just get up on Sunday morning and push the button and go, and he'll go, what can I help you with? Has a chat with you.
That's great.
And I said, could you tell me a little bit about what happened yesterday in the, you know, Iowa Indiana game? And he goes, oh yeah, it was a great game. Here's what happened. He gave just quick bullet points. It's unbelievable.
Incredible. People now will never leave their house. I'm serious. There's people that actually are falling in love with their ChatGPT. They have a name for it, and that's all they do, is they want to talk, because it's like having a conversation with someone who's just fantastic.
We did a show on A&I about 2 or 3 years ago, mm-hmm. when it was first.
Has changed since then, and isn't it crazy?
This guy talks to you. And I'd rather have a hot blonde GPT.
You can chat. Just ask for a blonde. Say, I'd like to talk to a woman. And then the woman comes on.
Oh
yeah.
Thanks.
Say, I'd much rather talk to a female. And next thing you know, the woman goes, excuse me, would you like to talk to a female? And you're like, yes, I would. And then start asking her questions. Yeah, it works.
So this guy's like my BFF now, you know, but we just talk football all the time, and I'll make an observation, and I'll say, oh, that sounds like so-and-so had a great game. Oh, he was spectacular yesterday. And anything else I can help you with? Mm-hmm. You know, it's conversation.
It's scary.
It really is.
It really is.
The soulless machine is probably the most personable person I know.
If we don't have to have touch anymore, or intimacy, sex, we're done. I mean, because we got it. I mean, we know the talking part, the conversation part, is the hardest part of any relationship. It could be, everyone says you need to communicate better. If you're communicating with ChatGPT and you don't need to get laid once in a while, then you've got yourself a fix. You're good to go. So the night before, REO Speedwagon gets back together. And by the way, they were asked, oh, what are you guys going to do? And they're like, oh, we don't know. So, I mean, I don't know if it's going to be the only time they ever play together. You would think that both sides are making their money. I don't know. So the night before, E. Hart Williams, Livgren, and Hope, also known as Kansas, the original members of Kansas, got back together again. The night before, they reunited. It was one of those things where they just kind of got, but then it wasn't that they weren't getting along. It's just been a long time. So they got to get, so I'm coming coming up with, so I was trying to think of some type of musical theme here. And of course we found out late last night that Bad Bunny will be the halftime show.
I'm sorry, Tony. I'm completely illiterate. I still am trying to figure out The Weeknd, and now I got Bad Bunny. Who the hell is they? Who are they?
Bad Bunny is a he. He is a world famous, big friends with Snoop Dogg, does a lot of Cuban Latino style music. A lot of it's sang in Spanish, but it's got that rat tat tat sound to it that the kids love.
But it's got
a smear of a rap to it. It's very interesting. I'm not saying I like it, but it's I can certainly listen to it more than I can listen to, say, Ice-T or Korn. But I certainly see the allure, and he's a goofy kind of guy, and he's a fun guy, and people love his music, and so he's cool.
I'm so totally oblivious on many things. When they said we got a big announcement at halftime, we're going to give when I heard Bad Bunny, I said, what?
Yeah.
Bad Bunny.
That's what I heard The Weeknd. I was like, who the hell's The Weeknd? And my son was like, Dad, like, grow up. I'm like, dude, I don't have a clue who The Weeknd is.
Where I never even hear about these. Not that I haven't heard of them. I never hear them mentioned. These guys come out of nowhere for me.
Well, it was back in the day. And again, we're just shows our age. That back in the day, you had a tried and true fan base, and you had a tried and true band that would come on, whether that was The Who, whether it was Bruce Springsteen, whether it was Tom Petty, whether it was Michael Jackson, whether it was Whitney Houston, you had, and that's what you brought. Now, as we evolve into this new Gen Z thing and the newer type of music, people would say, well, Bad Bunny's paid his dues. He's been around for a while and he's got all kinds of great hits. And I get the Beyonce. I'm trying to think of some of the other slathering up hot ass women that were on the halftime show, jumping up and down poles. I mean, I get some of that stuff. Shakira, I get some of that stuff. We've come a long way though. Since we've seen Janet Jackson's booby boobies. We've come a long way. Now, if that happened, tell me this. If that never happened, and Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake are doing Super Bowl 60, and we saw what we saw when she was doing the Super Bowl, how do you think we'd react?
Like yawn. That old girl needs to do a better job of strapping up her dress here.
Do you remember how that changed radio? I mean, you've been in radio as long as I have been.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, National Association of Parents and blah, 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 and family radio, and God bless family radio. That's great. If you want to listen to Christian radio, that's great. Good for you. I'm a Bible bumper guy too. I love Jesus and I'm all with you. But it's much like PETA. Sometimes they tend to take it too far. And they're like, well, if you read the Bible, it's not too far. Blah. I don't want to get in the middle of that. But we got to the point where we had to go song by song and make sure that none of our music had any cuss words in it. Okay, so do that on a classic rock format. The first song I thought was, you know, who the fuck are you? You couldn't play that. We couldn't play Van Morrison's Brown Eyed Girl because he says in the song, making love in the green grass behind the stadium.
Oh my God.
Because we were afraid someone was going to call the FCC. Because any bad type of language or anyone that complains about it was a $550,000 fine right off the bat. And they weren't asking questions. They were
sending
the word letter.
making love could have been interpreted as sex,
whatever. We didn't want to step on any toes. And we're a classic rock station. We got attitude, right? We got attitude. You know, we're paid to have attitude. I couldn't tell you how many songs have got the F-bomb in it that you don't even know about. I couldn't play Ram Jam, Black Betty. Couldn't play Dirty White Boy from Foreigner because it had White Boy in it. I'm like, are you serious?
What?
Yeah. Yeah. We had to stop playing all of those things. And then you like anything else. It's like when you get your first DUI. Anyone has ever had a DUI, realize what happens? You're like, wow, I'm never doing that again. And about 6 or 7 months later, after things tempered out, you've paid your lawyers off, you got your time in jail, whatever, and you're a drinker, you're going to go, I'm never drinking and driving again. Within about 6 or 7 months, it gets light. You float back to the top. And next thing you know, you're drinking and driving. Maybe not to the severity of what you were drinking and driving before, because you don't ever want to have two. And I'm not paying that lightly. Okay. I'm not saying that lightly.
No,
but all
no.
I know is I know a lot of people that drink and drive say, I'm never drinking and driving. And a year later, there they are having a couple of pops by after dinner and they're getting behind the wheel of the car. So like everything, you have to beat it down to submission. You have to shake the cage and let all the stuff go to the bottom. And then you hang it back up and let everything crawl back up again. And that's exactly what we've done with music. Now you can hear the F-bomb everywhere. You can hear F-bomb on ESPN.
Oh, watch the Pat McAfee show
every day, every day. So yeah, so and radio had this thing, you know, the seven deadly words that
George Carlin.
We had this unspeakable thing with the FCC, and the FCC is run by the government, so you have to be careful because you don't want to screw the IRS, the government. But we had this unspeakable thing where anything after 9 o'clock at night, that's where you ran your sex shows or you ran anything that was a little dark, a little off, a little weird. You get away with some hell, some damn, some shits and all that stuff like that. And that would be after it. But anytime in drive time, man, that was like, you did not want to go. And that's where we came on with rock and roll. And you know, we started pushing the envelope and people loved it. And now, of course, it's like anything goes. I remember when Dennis France showed his ass on NYPD Blue.
Oh yeah,
do you remember that?
That was a huge. Oh god, that was a firestorm.
What year was that?
Gosh,
I'm gonna look it up right now, and it's gonna drive me crazy. French.
I'm gonna say late '80s, maybe.
Shows ass year. I should ask my ChatGPT this. Dennis France showed his ass on TV. I'm trying to find it was the first year on television. Anyone remember the show? This guy's butt. I'm still trying to find.
Typical article. They bury the lead.
France played by Andy Sipowicz on the show 1994.
Okay, I was a little early. Yeah.
Jimmy Smith all showed their butts. Oh, in 1994, they all showed their butts. And of course, the FCC fined the series at the time on ABC $1.4 million for a 7 second nude scene featuring Charlotte Ross. Evidently, she was. I don't remember.
Oh, that. I remember that. Yeah. Well, here's my question, Tony. Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction, where her breast was visible for about 40. Or maybe a 0.4 seconds.
Yeah.
Dennis or Andy Sipowicz, the detective, and the ass shot. Is there anybody walking around now that's 45 or 50 years old that was traumatized from that and had altered their life? I mean,
no. You know what's funny is do you remember everyone kept saying it's kind of like a shooting in church. Which we had another one by
another one.
It's like if you're not safe in church, then where are you safe?
Yeah, come on, man.
So the thought was, and this is probably a pretty crappy analogy, but I'm going to use it anyway. If you're not safe watching the Super Bowl, which is the most watched television program every single year for the last 60 years, it's the most watched television show. Period. If you're going to invite billions of people to watch your show, then you're going to keep it as clean as you possibly can, or at least you want to keep it clean. And so that was kind of like if she shows her breast on Saturday Night Live or anything else, no one else is saying a word. But because that was family television, that is rated G. And that's where it was like showing boobs on Sunday night ABC television with Disney, with a Wonderful World of Disney. It would be like if you saw computer animation of Snow White's breasts or something. I don't know. But that was the whole thing. It wasn't so much that she was doing it on television. It was she was doing it during the Super Bowl when everyone should be able to watch the Super Bowl. And then, what did we just had just like five, I say 4 years ago, so it's probably 8 years ago. The whole stripper thing, the whole Beyonce, the whole J-Lo, the whole Shakira shaking their ass. I mean, it was a strip show, basically. It was everything but showing their breast. And we loved that. I mean, everyone was going crazy. I'm like, my 10-year-old loved that, watching that show.
Well, I saw something on a news show not too long ago about some kind of international twerking festival. I find that offensive because it's just gross. For most of the people twerking have a lot to twerk with, and I don't really find that very compelling. But the standards are so weird. On a SEC football game 2 weeks ago, Arbuckle, I forgot his first name. He came to Oklahoma with John Mateer. He was the offensive coordinator. Now he's moved with Mateer to be the same job at Oklahoma. He got into some kind of a shouting argument with somebody either on the field with Auburn or across the other sidelines, and they had him graphically on TV flipping him off.
Yeah.
And that's caused this big firestorm. I mean, we live in 2025. I don't think anybody's shocked by anything we see these days.
We're not. And I see your point, but we must hold a level of decency somewhere, right?
I guess.
I mean, seriously, I mean, we can't just let it go. We just can't let everyone go. It was like when Saturday Night Live, was told, you can't say penis. You can say it once. You can say it once. They're like, we can say it once, but we can't say it twice. Right. And they're like, no, you can only say it once. And like, wait a minute, we can say penis once, but we can't say penis twice. Like, no, because you're pushing the envelope. And so what they do, they said penis like 107 times in a row, to see what the FCC would do.
Here's my question. I know that that's the Federal Communications Commission.
Yes.
I guess it depends on each administration. I mean, can anybody tell me in the last 100 years, a single name of a chairman of the Federal Communications Commission? I don't know any. And I follow government like a hound dog.
Well, you can over the last couple of weeks, only because, the late night dude was taken off television, and that was because of the FCC, and the FCC is because Donald Trump is behind it. So, yes, I've heard his name several times. I don't remember it, but I have heard the Federal Communications Commission. I've heard his name several times over the last couple of weeks because of what's his face being canceled. And of course, coming back 3 days later,
Jimmy Kimmel, which he was canceled because he said something totally inappropriate. And, everybody's blaming it on the government and the FCC, but Disney's looking at their balance sheet and this guy's ratings have dropped to the absolute zero. And let's, on that subject, Tony, I don't care what he says, knock yourself out. Kimmel used to host the Man Show. One of the features on the Man Show, he would put on a pair of sweatpants and put something down his pants and blindfolded girls would have to try to find it.
Yeah.
This great moral beacon. But don't call these guys, don't say late night comedian Jimmy Kimmel. He's giving political commentary, biased political commentary. And he comes back the other day, doesn't apologize, says, maybe they people misunderstood me. But he says, but it just comes down to a president who can't take a joke. These aren't jokes. This is just pure, just blatant political theater and controversy that's not entertaining on late night TV, and it's sure as hell not comedy.
Well, and let's remember again, too, we need to look a little deeper now because we realize that roughly 23% of all ABT stations still aren't showing the Jimmy Kimmel Show. And you say, why is that? And that's because the majority of them are owned by Nextar or Sinclair.
Sinclair has our local ABC affiliate that you and I appear on.
And Sinclair has a large buying situation now with other ABC affiliates, and they want to make sure the FCC approves that buying of all those ABC affiliates.
Oh, and you want to know the other dirty little secret on that, Tony?
Go ahead, tell
Disney. Disney right now is in very advanced negotiation, trying to overhaul their image because they went way left for a while. They were ultra woke and have lost. Tens of ESPN alone has lost millions of viewers. They are trying now desperately to rake up all of the proceeds and get it approved with the FCC to buy the NFL network. Yep. They're trying to buy one of the most lucrative. The NFL is the most runaway. And we've talked about this before. The most runaway successful entity on television and in entertainment. They dwarf every other property there is. And Disney is trying to get FCC approval to acquire the NFL network. So all of a sudden, previously left Disney is all on board. Oh yeah, we'll go ahead and suspend Jimmy Kimmel. So yeah, the chain you suggested is certainly in place, but it was kind of a chain reaction that, you know,
that's the only reason. That's the only reason I'm not showing the show. And I mean, I get there's some people that like Jimmy Kimmel. Yeah. And they want to see it in Los Angeles County. It's one of those counties where you cannot watch a Jimmy Kimmel show, which is funny because that's where it's recorded. The crazy thing about it too is ABC then would be owned by Disney. ESPN would be owned by Disney, and the NFL Network would be owned by Disney. And by the way, ESPN Bet's owned by Disney.
Disney,
I know, because when I went up
to... Let's talk about that.
I still have a check for $800, which I have not cashed. That $800 is for 8 hours of work on college game night from 6 until 2 o'clock in the morning on ESPN in Bristol, Tennessee, back in 1995 or 96. I think it was. And I saved the check because it's got Mickey Mouse's face in the corner. I thought that was kind of cool to get a check from Disney. So I have yet to cash that check. I'm going to hold on to it.
Well, you know, I got an idea, Tony. You can just make a copy of that check and then go cash it.
Just holding on to it. It's nice to know I've got that $800 behind glass somewhere. So life has changed a lot. We got the Bad Bunny thing. We got a lot of different bands coming together, and I thought it'd be kind of fun talking about Bad Bunny. I know I'm trying to think of some bands. You know, we were going to do the whole you know, what bands have not played the Super Bowl that we'd like to see, but I thought that was kind of boring. But I knew that we'd get at least 30 minutes out of you and me just talking about classic rock and about sports. I do want to talk some college football quickly.
Let's
here.
Do it.
It's my effing show, so I can take as long as I want. And it's your show, too. It's actually your show, not my show. You tell me to go, baby, you go. Kentucky, Georgia. Georgia 20.5 coming off that line. Obviously, that's not the defense. I will say this, and I know that one of our friends, Kai Gregory, was loving himself some Alabama over 26 in that game, and I cannot believe it went under. They didn't score in the second half. Georgia's defense looked a lot better in the second half than they did in the front. And if you're the Kentucky Wildcats right now, coming off a demoralizing loss to South Carolina, you better be ready. They may get the goose egg this weekend. Your thoughts on Kentucky, Georgia? Georgia bounces back, correct?
I think they bounce back, but you know, after watching the two games they've played in the SEC this year, I think there's a little bit of an issue in the ranks of the Georgia coaching staff. And because these other two, I think it's easy to kind of trace this. This is my theory on what's going on.
Did you get this straight from the congressman? Did you get this from Bert?
No, Bert, we didn't get into this subject, but I would really like to pick Bert's brain because he's very close to what's going on there. He actually played with Kirby Smart. I think Georgia has ascended to a plateau where other schools, I mean, you've watched now two games in a row where the Tennessee coaching staff hit Georgia with a blitzkrieg that they were not prepared for in the early parts of the game. They dug a big hole and had to dig out of it. Alabama came in and did it the exact same thing. It was as if Alabama was just absolutely ready to go, knew what they were going to do, and Georgia was just kind of winging it. I think Georgia has gotten into a complacent situation where they just believe that their talent's going to win out. I don't know how many hours Ryan Grubb put in to devise that kitchen sink game plan in the first half. Tony, look at what Alabama ran. They knew they weren't going to be able to run the ball.
I knew that Alabama's offense wasn't that good. Tyson said he's not that great of a quarterback. I mean, he was making some great plays and some great throws. And I'm not going to take anything away from him at all. But if you watched every single play, it was like their defensive line was a half step behind Alabama's offensive line.
Their defensive backs were tentative.
You're exactly right. Like it took them a half a second to figure out what the play was, and by then it was over.
And you did things that have to drive Kirby Smart fundamentally crazy, because the first Alabama touchdown to Menard, he ran a simple post pattern where you just, for those that are not football educated, you just run a pattern, you know, kind of even flaring out, but then you take a sharp break back toward the goalpost. And the number one cardinal rule, if you watch that replay, if you're a trained football defensive back, trying to defend a pass. I'm going to use the football terminology here. The number one fundamental, you never let a guy cross your face. That means if a guy's in his cut, you have to do whatever you have to do to stay on the inside of him. Because if he makes that cut, it's just a wide open lane to deliver the ball. And if you watch that replay, they had that down so precisely. And the Georgia guy was just standing there like a statue. Yep. Menard cuts him off. The ball's already in the air. Ty Simpson had already thrown the ball before the cut was made, and he just puts his hands up and the ball's right there. Yep. Alabama was so precision. It was like a surgeon. Tennessee just bombed them like, just dropping the...
I think for a while, their talent was so much better than everyone they played that even they could slip up and make up for it on the backside.
Well, and now you can't do that. That's the complacency they've gotten into. I think these other staff, Tony, are outworking the Georgia staff right now and are ultra prepared for these games. And then Georgia makes the adjustments and their athletes show up. Alabama didn't score a point in the second half. Yep. And that makes Kirby's decision. And, you know, all this Alabama's in Kirby's head. Well, there's a little bit to that now. It's not that he's afraid of them or intimidated by them, but he makes other decisions that really go completely against the grain. Because if you're down 24-21, you've been down the whole game and you're on the 6-yard line, 4th and 1, kick the damn field goal with 9 minutes left, tie the game. Yep. That's the first objective. Get it back to, we're starting over. We can beat these guys in the last 9 minutes, but no, they go for the first down behind 2 freshmen running backs, and LT Overton stuffs the play. Georgia never got a chance to score again. That is just coaching malfeasance 101. And it's because Kirby's, you know, you've got his testosterone boiling. You know, old school coaches, and I'm sure you played for guys or heard guys say this, well, if we're not good enough to get 1 yard, we ain't worth a damn anyway. Then we don't deserve to win.
You're right.
And that kind of Cro-Magnon macho attitude has gotten more teams beaten over the years by kind of old school coaches. And Kirby's not that old, but Kirby was the son of a coach. He was a legendary high school coach in South Georgia. I'm sure Kirby still has that kind of, you know, backwater personality in some circumstances where he let his emotions get ahead of his logical brain of tie the damn game. That was inexcusable that Georgia didn't take the 3 points, and it came back to really haunt them.
And Kirby's not supposed to be losing to Alabama anymore since, of course, that other guy left. I mean, I know everyone's like, once Nick Saban leaves, you figured Georgia was just going to roll it up on Alabama every single year and they're not getting it done. Tell me something. If you are Dabo Swinney, you're going on the road to take on North Carolina. You're only giving up 14, which, by the way, I mean, I'm just like, wow, Clemson got beat by Syracuse, who got beat 35-3 this weekend.
By Duke,
a team that beat NC State at home. Syracuse is not a good football team, and they made Clemson look bad.
Beat them by 17.
I don't bet on 2 turds. I'm not going to sit there and lay money on a 1-3 team. But based on what we saw, and the worst thing could have happened for Dabo, and that is they have the bye week. They had a week off to fester through all this stuff, to think about what's going on. He came out with, if you don't want to win, you know, championship every single year, I guess get rid of me, blah, 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 blah. Did not have to do that. Did not have to, you know, he's done enough at Clemson. He shouldn't have to answer for anything, but he looks like he's on the way out. My son goes to school there. He's like, you wouldn't believe how many people want to fire him. I'm like, really? He's won 2 national titles, 8 of the last 10. I said, seriously. And they feel like he is not changing with the times. A lot of it plays in the transfer portal. I bought in saying, oh, look, Dabo's doing it right. He's not going to the transfer portal, and he's keeping all the guys together, and their chemistry alone will bring my Cub Cliff, and they're going to come back, and they're going to have the same guys. And, well, they had the same guys from a 10-win season, but they didn't beat anybody last year. And you were spot on. You nailed it. You can have 10 wins, and if you bring back 60% of your offensive defense, but they weren't that good, you bring back 60% of mediocrity, and that's what they did. But now they're going on the road. They went 56-0. What is he going to say? They win by 7. What is he going to say? And if they lose, what does Dabo say?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I hope everybody got to see the starting lineup, our TV show on Saturday. Terry Quillian analyzes coaches. She's going to have a great one coming up this week. She's already so fired up because she was a huge Sam Pittman fan, probably the most popular guy in all of college football, who was canned on Sunday, just like I predicted on our show Sunday morning. He won't last the weekend. But, you know, Arkansas just basically quit in the game against Notre Dame. So Sam had to go, but probably the most vile guy, the most disliked guy in all of college football, Bobby Petrino, gets yet another chance now as an interim coach at Arkansas. So she's going to carve that.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? We got to tell the youngsters, go pull up Bobby Petrino motorcycle and just Google it and start reading to your heart's content. What was that? 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Yeah. About that. But Bobby Petrino has a history of even worse behavior than that. Do you know when he was the Falcons coach, after week 13, there was 3 weeks left in the season, he got fed up with some people in the front office and with Arthur Blank, the owner. He went to Arthur Blank after week 13 and says, I'm quitting. I'm out of here. I'm packing my shit up. I'm leaving. And Arthur Blank goes, well, you got a contract. You got to at least play out the season. Mm-hmm. He left the meeting with Arthur Blank saying, all right, I'll stick around. The next morning, people came in for work. There was no sign of him. He was gone. All of his shit was cleaned out. And you know how he let his players know, Tony? He did a memo and he laminated every copy and taped them to the lockers of all the players saying, I'm quitting. I'm out of here. Blamed a bunch of people. I mean, this guy is just a complete train wreck.
No,
and now he's getting another chance because there are some Arkansas boosters. But anyway, that's going to be Terry's subject this week.
That was 13 years ago, by the way. Bobby Petrino, the motorcycle, was 13 years ago, 2012.
I was going to say, I was going to guess 12. I'm usually way off on that. So
you're spot on.
That would be, but her segment, if you missed it this week, was on Bill Belichick and the nonsensity of him even being at North Carolina. He's got both of his sons on the staff, one of them who had never coached before. He's got the general manager of the program, a son on his staff who has never coached before. And before the game at UCF, where they lost 34-3 to Central Florida, a team that got blown out by Kansas State, who's got a losing record this week. 34-3 embarrassment for North Carolina there. Guess who was on the field for pregame warmups? His hot girlfriend, Jordan, whatever her name was, wearing mini shorts and ankle or knee high boots.
Yeah, baby.
With big old heels on football field. Now, this is the coach, Tony, Bill Belichick, that said, the number one rule in my camp, no distractions. A photo shoot came out this week of him and her on the beach over the summer doing yoga stuff, in the surf, and her like standing on his legs. And I mean, and I know you guys gave me a bunch of grief when I was saying he's making a complete ass out of himself, and you guys think it's okay because he's with a 24-year-old.
Oh man, it is what it is.
But why is he coaching North Carolina? This is so absurd.
Because they hired his ass. I mean, I'm serious. You bring up a great question. First of all, he has to do something, right? I mean, he ain't getting laid 23 hours a day. That ain't happened. So he's probably just using it just to get the hell away from the little sex kitten, just so he's got something to do and he can say, I'm busy. But yeah, it's a weird thing in the last 1 year. And I mean, but you know, if you were running a college and Bill Belichick wanted to be your head coach, do you not have to hire him? Do you not have to hire him just because it's Bill? First of all, it's a win. They don't win another football game. It's a win. They sold out their season tickets.
Yeah, okay? That's true.
They front ended it and they sold out. I mean, 5 years in advance, they're sold out. They've never been sold out. They're sold out. They're good to go. And of course, you get basketball season starting in 10 days. They don't give a squat. Yeah, North Carolina is all about basketball.
That's true.
It's the first time we actually thought more about their football program in their basketball program.
Yeah, that's a good call. You phrased that a very interesting question. Don't you have to hire him? I guess you do. But for Belichick's standpoint, if this was to prove that he was, you know, the mastermind guy of football that he was labeled, which is starting to look to me like really unjustly, because Tommy, as his wife used to call him, Tommy Brady, not only won 7 Super Bowls in New England, he goes down at 43 years old and wins one at Tampa Bay, a team that's been mediocre at best most of their existence. So, I mean, the narrative now, I mean, all he's doing is dooming his place in history of, well, Tom Brady won 7 Super Bowls in New England, and Bill Belichick is going to be an afterthought, because if this was, he made the tour in the last off season last year of NFL teams begging teams to hire him to be an NFL coach, and the stamp and the opinion was already there. And I think somebody would have given him the chance, but remember what he demanded? I have to have total player personnel control. Look at how that went in New England his last 3 years. They were the worst team in the league after Brady left, with Bill Belichick being totally in control. So, I mean, an unbelievable coaching resume, but he is just completely tearing it down now by this charade of just this team nepotism bullshit at North Carolina.
Kip, only the second time in 80 years Vanderbilt is undefeated going into the sixth week of the year. They're 5-0, and here they come to Bryant-Denny this weekend, where Bama's given up 10.5. Can Vanderbilt beat them back-to-back years?
I don't think so. I just Alabama's just different at home. I think Alabama got caught in a euphoric state after they won that exhilarating game against Georgia, that they came tantalizingly close to blowing a 25-point lead. And I think they went into Vanderbilt, and Nick Saban actually didn't help them very much. That on game day, he said every game on the road in the SEC is tough, but then he said, well, maybe not Vanderbilt. Do you remember at the end of the game, they put that clip from game day? Somebody was savvy enough in the Vanderbilt athletic department.
Yes, they did.
They had that queued up just in case. They played it over and over and over again as everybody celebrated. Well, maybe except for Vanderbilt. Alabama walked into just a perfect trap. And I think they would be vulnerable for that again, because beating Georgia and ending that winning streak is just a massive accomplishment and such a relief for Kalen DeBoer and his staff. They had to have that game, and they coached like it. They prepared like it. The sense of urgency for Alabama was so much higher than Georgia, and it showed on the field, and they played a perfect first half. They had that down to the very last detail. They had Menard, a wide receiver, throwing to another wide receiver for a first down. They had a swing pass to Caden Proctor, 360 pounds, rambling down to the goal line.
I wanted him to score so bad. It reminded me of the old fridge days. I wanted to see him score so bad. He cut to the left. He used to run back too. He knew what he was doing. Yeah, Alabama sit there 10th right now. Vanderbilt 16th in the AP Top 25. I'm not sure what surprised me more, the fact that Alabama's 10th or that Vanderbilt's 16th.
Well, how about this for an item? I saw one sports book yesterday had the top three right now for the Heisman Trophy as far as their in-house odds. Jeremiah Love is right now the favorite from Notre Dame after his 4 touchdown performance against Arkansas. Number 2 is Ty Simpson, and number 3 is Diego Pavia.
How about that?
Who could have ever in a million years imagined in week 6 of the season coming up that Pavia and Simpson, 2 of the top 3 Heisman Trophy candidates who weren't even on the radar for any such thing going into the season. And of course, Case Kiefer has a future on Ty Simpson. Of course. And he had a 35-1 on Mateer, so he's really got a stomach ache over that one with Mateer on the shelf for a couple weeks. But anyway, Ty Simpson and Diego Pavia, the ultimate quarterback showdown. Who had that on their bingo card coming into the year?
No, this is going to be a Gino Toretta year, man. Someone's going to win a Heisman and not be able to play another down after it. It's just going to, it's going to be what they.
I think you're right.
It's going to be that real.
But
quick,
let me finish. Alabama would be on upset alert except for what happened last year. That is fresh on their mind. They are not going to be vulnerable at home against Vanderbilt. I think there's some payback here, and I don't. Vandy's not going to sneak up on them, and man to man on the road, they don't match up with Alabama.
A game that used to mean everything. When I first got here, man, everyone always watched the Miami Florida State game. They always played early in the season. Whoever won that game had the inside track to win the national title, or at least share it. This is when we had the UPI and the AP and all that coaches. Well, I don't even think we had a coaches poll until USA Today came out. And then, of course, if you lost that game, you were out. You were done. Now, not so much. Now you got Miami. Yeah, now you got me wide right. Now you got Miami giving up 4.5. I can still see Bobby Bowden run down the middle of the field. 4.5, Miami's giving up to FSU, who just got their first loss. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, Miami has not left home. They've played four straight games in Hard Rock Stadium. I will not stamp my approval on any team until I see them play a road game. Missouri has played five straight home games, and they're playing one more against Alabama next week. So there's six games in a row to open the season. There's all kinds of teams in that same boat. I got to see a team on the road before I know if they're legitimate or not. And, you know, Miami showed that they didn't, I mean, the score is so on, representative of the Florida game. Miami was a 1 foot measurement away from Florida threatening to take the lead with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter of that game. They did score two what the hell touchdowns at the end when Florida came up short. The final score was 25 to 6 or whatever.
26-7. Yeah.
Yeah, the game was of seven. That's right. The game was not that close or not that much of a blow. It was much closer. So I think I saw some cracks in the Miami facade. And now going into Florida State, I don't think it helps Miami that Florida State lost a shocking upset Friday night to Virginia. I think Florida State's going to come in there in a really foul mood. And you're going to get a similar effort that you saw against Alabama when they were being disrespected. I really like Florida State in this game, and maybe I'll be proven wrong. Maybe Miami's completely legitimate, but I still am haunted by the images of their game at Syracuse last year, which cost them the playoffs and just a complete road flop. They also did the same thing at Georgia Tech last year.
Something so overrated too is, I mean, I know that it's a bye week, right? I mean, how much stock do you put in? Everyone's like, well, Miami had the bye week. They had extra week of preparation. If you got a banged up quarterback, you got a hamstring injury, something like that, I get it. But more times than not, we keep sitting there saying, we talk about the revenge factor that doesn't mean shit, and we talk about the bye week. And sometimes when you're rolling, trust me, Clemson didn't want to have a bye week this week. They want to play football. They want to get after it. And I bet you Miami did too.
Yeah, and if you've won four games in a row as a player, you don't want to sit a week. Yeah. It is always good from a physical standpoint, but I don't know so much on a mental standpoint. And this is a road game against your hated rival, Florida State, which, as you mentioned, had a lot of history. But go back and look at last year's Florida State-Miami game, which was at Miami. Mm-hmm. Florida State was completely a complete loss. They were going nowhere. Florida State for three quarters hung right with Miami last year. These rivalry games are a whole different animal too. And people, I don't know, we're just so, we just instantly approve because we're such a snapshot society now. Oh, Miami is a much better team than Florida State. Well, I'm going to be interested to see that because I think Florida State is going to throw, I called Alabama's strategy the kitchen sink. I think they're going to throw every major appliance at Miami on Saturday.
Well, I have to ask you one other game because we're talking about Florida teams, man. FSU is obviously going to be biting back against Miami. What is Florida going to do against Texas? They're catching 6.5 down in the swamp.
Yeah. What has Texas done to deserve that kind of favoritism? Tell me what Texas has done. They lost at Ohio State, which obviously is a tougher assignment than Florida, but not by a long ways. Playing in the swamp is ask LSU late last year and ask Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, who had chances to be playoff teams and went in there and saw their dreams die in the swamp. Lagway needed a week. He didn't get to practice preseason. I think Florida, I think this is the Alamo. No,
let me tell you what, like every dime in the world is going to be on tech. You're talking about the preseason number one team. You're talking about the preseason Heisman Trophy hopeful, and you're picking on a team that's 1-3.
Yep.
And they're only catching 6.5 at home. I mean, sometimes I like to bet, acting like I don't have a clue what I'm doing, which is about every time we do a show.
Don't take Texas. I'll just tell folks out there, don't take Texas.
Everybody's going to be on Texas. Everyone.
They played three of the worst teams on earth in Austin. They did have a big win over Sam Houston State, where Arch Manning showed some really a disappointing thing when after a touchdown pass, a guy on the ground, he was like taunting the poor Sam Houston State guy who's going to be a construction worker at the end of the season when his career's over. you know, that was really punkish and really low class. I've lost a lot of respect for Arch Manning, who I said before the season does not deserve all this preseason hype, nor does Texas. I wasn't impressed with Texas last year. And what they've done at home, that means nothing to me going to Florida, who's a desperate team. I'm all over Florida plus that many points. And I think a lot of people are going to have that. I think that's going to be down to 4.5 or 5 by the time it kicks off. Texas does done nothing to deserve a touchdown favoritism on the road in a historically really tough place to play. Florida's played a tough schedule. Texas, other than the Ohio State game, has played no one.
On paper, I think that's the only way you can look at a given 6.5 right now. And again, if just from coming out of the blue, coming out of the woods, going, wait a minute, isn't Texas preseason number one? Weren't they preseason number one? Weren't they? And how is Florida 1-3? And so the Swamp's not up, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that line. Talk about the smelly fish for sure. All right, so we're going to get after it tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, back on the Coastal Digital Sports Network. We're also on Audacity, which I just got Tony Curry Radio on, so super happy about being on that wonderful platform. We're working on being on VSiN. We got a great little handicapping show along with Case Kiefer out there in Las Vegas, where you're going to be going next week. Kai Gregory's going to join us, the four of us. K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com. We'll be doing that 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, Central Time, 10 o'clock again on Friday as well. We'll get into the NFL as well. We got the Major League Baseball playoffs. I'm thinking
maybe your Reds could possibly shock the world.
Cincinnati, well, you know, and I read your text this morning. You said some major favorite is going to lose.
One of those three big favorites.
Yep. And you got Abbott.
The Tigers don't deserve to be a big favorite against the Guardians. They've played about 10 times in the last 2 weeks, and it's been almost dead even.
Green threw the one hit no-no a couple of weeks ago, the shutout, first shutout of his career with 9 innings. If Green goes first, I think it's going to be on that first game. If they can get that first game, and of course, obviously, Ohtani's going to be thrown in there. Kershaw, of course, going to be, or not Hershire. I was thinking about Oral. Isn't that funny?
Oral Kershaw. You don't want him to come.
Wow, no doubt. Kershaw will certainly be going, so I'm sure. But I don't know if he's going to be going first in the series.
I saw this morning Kershaw is not on the first round roster.
Yeah, because he just pitched yesterday.
This is a Hall of Fame pitcher. And yeah, he's 41 years old or whatever. Nah, he's still great. You're going to see Yamamoto, the big Japanese sensation, probably Ohtani. I'm not sure. The Dodgers have started about 20 different guys this year.
The Reds bats need to wake up. If they can wake up their bats, they're going to be okay. They may have a shot, but they're getting plus 220.
The Reds will get good pitching, but they've got to score some runs.
I hear you, brother. All right, I'll see you tomorrow morning. Don't forget, of course, the starting lineup as well. Every Saturday morning, 10:30, 11 o'clock, we'll get after on ABC 3340. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you.
You bet, Tony. Go Bad Bunny.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.